This is Geek Speak, episode 30 of season 16. I'm Lyle Troxell. With me in the studio is Miles Elam. He's a software engineer, political junkie, and a micro farmer. Now, you think micro farmer means that he's a small farmer, or that he farms a small farm?
Wow. Okay. So we're just diving
right
in.
Very large.
Yeah, we were just having some pre-show conversation.
Also, this is Ben Jaffe. He's a programmer, musician, and video geek.
What's up?
It's good to see you again. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Why weren't you on the show last week?
I feel like every time I've been available, the show has been recorded elsewhere, like Las Vegas, for example. Yeah. And whenever I have not been available, it's been right here.
Well, we missed you in Vegas last week. I thought you'd fly in. We're going to start with Miles tonight, and we're starting with Miles because he hasn't told me what the heck he's talking about, so I'm just going to put him on the spot. Now, go.
The auto industry.
Okay.
Been in the news a lot lately, especially with regard to Tesla and their autopilot mode, and there have been some accidents, and there's been the question of, like, are we ready for it?
For more information, see last week's episode.
See next week's episode. We know what's going to happen.
We talked about it a bit last week.
Well, one of the things about autopilot is that it requires that you have... a hand on the steering wheel at all times, or else it'll start beeping and annoying.
Okay, so that's part of it.
Yeah. So the notion that it is you turn on autopilot and then you fall asleep and, you know, curl up, you know, doesn't really apply. It's not
not a self-driving car.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been now a case of the car or autopilot mode avoiding a crash with a pedestrian.
Oh, that's good.
So it's not all bad news.
So is that the feature that auto brakes for you when something gets in the way?
Well, autopilot in general, if there's something in the way, it's going to brake.
So it like keeps you in the lanes and it keeps you from hitting things, basically.
Right. Is the idea.
We talked a bit about some of the functionality last week of the Tesla and this feature of adding in braking, even though you might not want to. Avoidance, basically. Collision avoidance is an automatic feature, which is very nice to have.
Miles, you said it's not all bad news. But I'm like hanging on the spot. So what's the bad news about this?
Well, in the past, in the last several weeks, there have been accidents.
I see.
Failures of.
So this incident was a purely positive incident.
Right.
Ah, got it.
That said, something I thought was interesting was along with that because they are being more computerized. They are having aspects. The auto industry publishing its first set of cybersecurity best practices.
Oh, thank goodness!
Long overdue.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. We've been talking about cars being compromised for years and years on this program.
Yes.
It's happened a lot.
And the fact that some of those compromises, those exploits, have been trivial.
Mm-hmm.
Have been like...
Trivial not as in small, but trivial as in very easy to pull off.
Yes. Very easy to pull off. And in many cases, wireless. You don't need to have... close physical access to the car. You can just have
it's like over Bluetooth or some
wireless technology, and you get an antenna that can, you know, a directional antenna toward your target, and there you go.
So what's this? What group is forming this security analysis or suggestions for smart cars?
Well, it's a really obscure name that has nothing to do with it. I'm actually lying. It's called the Automotive Information Sharing and Analysis Center. So it's, yet another acronym that kind of says, we have to deal with how automobiles deal with information and getting that information around the car, like sharing, and we're going to analyze it.
It's just strange because they've basically been building these little computers that roll around, and they haven't looked like computers, but they're computers, right?
Absolutely.
And they've managed to not... address this, you know, plug their ears and go la 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 and just ignore it.
Well, not all of them.
A lot of them.
I remember, in fact, I heard someone complain online that their Tesla required a firmware update for their door locking mechanism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, what is this? I have to do a special firmware just for the door and not for the rest of the computer.
Yeah.
And I thought, my God, Tesla got it absolutely right.
Right.
Because the fact that you have to deliver the firmware directly to the door means that that subsystem is not connected to every other subsystem for you to update and manage.
That does sound like the right way to do it. Yeah. Absolutely.
So it's a little bit more of a pain in the ass for doing a firmware update.
Sure.
Software update, which you should be doing at the dealer anyway, and the dealer should be handling that unless you're really being a do-it-yourself, in which case... Hard is not supposed to be a.
A
it's supposed to be more difficult. Yeah,
All right, so a new consortium on making sure that cars are a little more secure, especially as they get smarter. Thanks, Miles. Did you guys know that this month will be manufactured? Something will be manufactured for the last time.
I actually know what it is.
You do? Okay. I do. Miles, you know what it is?
Yes.
Ah, man.
Ah, okay. No,
do you know surprises. Do you know what the acronym stands for?
Video cassette recorder?
Yes, a VCR.
Yeah,
a video
VCR. Cassette recorder. What is a VCR anyway?
So in any case, the last one will be manufactured this month. So if you have videotapes that you want to make sure you have the data off of them, it's time to start doing that. Now, they'll be around for eons from now, but new ones won't be produced. So from this point forward, they will only get worse and age and be less of them.
Yeah, that's definitely true. They used to, this company that we're talking about, Funai Electronics, which supplies to a lot of the companies that you hear about, like Sanyo.
Sure.
They sold at their peak 15 million units, and last year, 750,000. So they're still selling a good number of them, but in context, it's barely any. And at that point, it kind of doesn't really make sense to make them anymore, because it's much easier if you're making 15 million units per unit rather than, you know, less than a million units, because it's hard to source parts, it's hard to keep your manufacturing pipelines working and everything.
Become boutique items. It's kind of like steampunk without actually being cool.
So the VCR lasted about 40 years.
I'm going
40
to...
years of VCRs.
40 years.
40 years. I think that's kind of neat that's the age of them, right? Like, they won't get older than that in some ways because they've stopped being produced. So
in my house, I have a typewriter. I think I might go get a VCR and put it next to my typewriter? Like the...
Yeah, definitely.
The technology that... VCRs are not as pretty, though.
No, they're not as pretty. But the VCR, the tape itself has an ability to record amazing audio.
That is true.
High-end audio.
They're very good at
VCRs,
that.
Yeah. Have you ever cleaned a VCR head? Have you ever taken apart and mounted
it? A little thing that spins around, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For quite a while, I actually repaired VCRs. Because
really?
It was one of those things in electronics. You know, in college, I was doing electronics. Before that as well, I'd kind of take them apart and clean them. And I worked at a VCR, you know, a rental shop in high school. And so I kind of got to know the VCR. And they were fun for components. I took a lot of them apart and used the components. I've got pieces of them in my electronic junk drawers and such. But anyways, it's kind of sad to see them go. And at the same time, of course, I think it's remarkable that 40 years is how long they lasted.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that the DVD is going to last a lot less.
You know, actually, what else has lasted 40 years is the headphone jack.
At least 40? No, that's a bunch older than that.
It's been more than 40 years, and we're at the point where companies are considering, you know, well, maybe we'll make a phone without a headphone jack. You know, there's the rumors of the iPhone and all that stuff. I really hope that does not take off, because it's just so convenient to have a standardized, simple plug for doing something that you know, do all the time.
I do want to call you out on the – you don't think DVD players will last 40 years. Mm. I firmly disagree.
Why?
Ooh.
Because if you have VCRs or VHS
– yeah.
Because that's really what we're talking about, is VHS, not just the VCR, because also Betamax was also VCR. We don't think it that way. You had VHS, you had Super VHS. But they all worked through the same thing. So you could have a Super VHS recorder. Does that still count as a VCR, the Super VHS?
Sure.
As long as it can play the backward compatible?
Yeah.
Okay. So think of the first time that a DVD player was released. And then think about the fact that every Blu-ray player plays DVDs. And every extended or ultra Blu-ray player or ultra HD Blu-ray player plays DVDs.
The DVD was first brought on the market in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So now we're at 20 years.
We're at 20 years.
So do you think that Ultra HD Blu-ray players will cease to exist, or their successor, in 20 years?
Well, I don't think there'll be backwards compatible optical drives in 20 years that are being sold. No way.
I think there will be. But I also think it's
then again,
different.
Then again, I work for
Netflix. So it's a different
thing. I'm the wrong person to ask.
Yeah, you are the wrong person.
DVD's so passe.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. The reason why we have DVDs and CDs really right now is because of copyright rules. I'm hoping that those will resolve themselves within 20 years. But maybe that's not true.
Maybe that's naive.
Because it's a horrible way to store data. They're too small.
But there also is the element of, you don't need to be connected to anything.
Yeah, but you don't need to with a flash drive either. Like if you have a hard drive that has all your media on it.
Yes, that's true, if you want to use Netflix, you have to be connected to something.
We're talking 20 years, man. I'm saying that in 20 years, like that I have a DVD, a Blu-ray DVD right now, because that's the best way for me to have a portable at home experience. Even though, does Blu-ray support 4K?
I don't know.
I think there must be a 4K DVD, Blu-ray DVD version, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's what Ultra HD is.
Ultra HD, okay. Yeah. So that exists right now, but that optical medium is actually relatively large for the storage it's doing. It's not an efficient medium. So at some point in our future history, we won't use a spinning optical thing. I mean, that's the other thing. You have to spin it, which means the machine itself is not as stable. It's not a solid state thing.
They break really often. Yeah. The discs can scratch.
You have some problems with that. So the reason they really exist is because of the movie industry, right? They want to be able to sell and control how things are going. But when it comes down to it, Amazon sales of digital media is increasing. And I don't know if Blu-ray is decreasing, but I doubt it's increasing as fast as online video services.
Mm-hmm. So what was the year that VCRs first came about? So
well, 40 years ago, roughly.
So 76,
yeah,
somewhere thereabouts. Now, VCRs were around, 2 years after you and I were born, 30 years before Ben was born.
Oh, come on. What am I, 12?
No, I didn't Chandler's. Do the math,
but. So, why are you, man, you're just like, you're making enemies.
You guys, double-sided, double-layer DVD is 17 gigs.
Uh-huh.
17, come on, 17 gigs?
Oh, no, 17 gigs, that's a lot.
17 gigs is not a lot, but...
Well, it depends on what you're storing,
I guess.
But the multi-layer Blu-ray discs are upwards of 100 gigabytes. Mm-hmm. They're still within the range of reason.
So are we talking about optical storage, or are we talking about DVDs specifically?
I'm talking about like
something when, that can when play will a DVD
company,
disc.
I think the subject here is, when will the last DVD player be sold?
DVD or optical?
Well, so Miles is saying that a Blu-ray counts because you can play DVD, which I think
exactly
is totally valid.
DVD, I don't know if you really should count it from there. I think you should count it from CD because every DVD player can play a CD. So how long have audio CDs been out?
Well, it's not...
Because that is an unbroken chain of compatibility there with optical drives.
Oh, we're going down a very complicated rabbit hole with a lot of branches.
Well, the question is, when are you going to break the compatibility with the specific dimensions of an audio CD, which is the reason why movie discs are that size now?
That's true.
And they're kind of convenient. They fit in your hand.
That's true.
So Blu-ray DVDs are 16 years old. They were released in 2000 by Sony. Yeah. Blu-rays.
It's a different question. That's the only thing that I'll say about this. I feel like I'm kind of in between you guys on this.
Right now, do you guys buy CDs?
I have.
Have you bought one in the last year?
Not me.
You have bought one in the last year?
Yes.
Why?
Because it was at a flea market and it cost $2 and they might be giant.
So you didn't buy a new one?
I did at someone's music show.
Ah, because you want to give money to them.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's why you bought it through DVD. That's why you bought the CD, is to give money to the band.
Well, because I wanted the music.
Okay.
I could have gone and found them on Spotify, but...
Chandler, intern Chandler, have you bought a CD in your lifetime?
He's thinking...
Not that he can remember.
Wait, right, never bought a CD in your lifetime?
He's not even on mic. He can't defend himself. Quite enough.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, my point is this. We have 20
There's
more...
no defense anyway. What does it matter if he has a mic or not?
Okay, so look. What you guys are saying is that we're going to keep doing DVDs and CDs even though they're kind of stupid. Like, what's the point of doing it? If all of your content's available on your phone and you can put all of it there and you can stream it to any device you want, then why would you have this medium that's just useless?
To answer your question, first of all, I just want to, extend an olive branch here and say, yes, they are stupid. Any optical media that spins that fast and is that easy to scratch is stupid. But
cool and stupid.
But back in the day, it was much better than tapes in certain ways. I guess tapes are better in other ways. They're very durable and everything. But I do think that optical media, to broaden it a little bit, basically, things in a CD, DVD, Blu-ray, whatever form factor will be around in 20 years. And I think it's, and I believe it's because of connectivity. because of ease of use and connectivity. So people in places that are...
Get it. So the portable format of the VHS has been replaced by the DVD.
It's like Walkmans.
And so therefore, Walkmans, you still need a portable form that you can take anywhere you want.
Yeah.
You still want to be able to use the red box at the store late at night and watch
and
a
movie. And let's be honest. Like, I have fan folds that hold DVDs. Yes, I have that many DVDs. and I have, 200 in something that is easily carried.
Yeah.
Doesn't take up that much space. I mean, I've gotten rid of the original boxes long ago because they take up too much space. But right now, the big push has been for going to Amazon Prime Video or Netflix or Google Play Video.
By the way, you've got about 3 terabytes of data if they're double density DVDs.
Yeah. And
that's it. 3 terabytes.
Yeah. Like, this is a hard drive.
Yeah.
But the issue, though, is that right now the industry that you were talking about that where copyright is causing that disc is also moving us toward a you don't own any of the media.
Right, you're only
you
licensing. Well, you don't technically own the content on your DVDs either.
Right, but if I have a DVD,
it can't be taken away from you.
But if I have a DVD, the physical DVD, and I keep it with me, I have, if not illegal, a moral justification for saying, I already purchased this movie, I already have it, so now I'm going to rip it and put it onto my spinning hard drive, my spinning rest.
So if you have a receipt of buying a DVD, a movie from iTunes, you have the receipt because, of course, the credit history, it's going to be around you forever. Mm-hmm. So now you've got a receipt. Don't you still have justification to play it anytime you want? Like, what's the difference of having the receipt of buying it digitally with full rights versus an optical drive thing that takes up space and clutter and collects dust?
Because for the most part, when you are downloading something, one, you're just streaming it most of the time. But in the cases that you are downloading, which isn't really possible with Netflix right now, but that you are downloading with, say, Amazon Prime or with Google Play, then many times that downloads to a special area that they have put whatever DRM is on it. And if anything happens to Google or Amazon or to their respective departments, I think the departments would fall before
it becomes problematic.
Then you lose it.
But first off, the only reason that's not true with the DVD and the rights and such is that you can rip the DVD because someone broke the encryption. And same thing with Blu-ray and CDs, of course, don't even have them. So, and there's ripping technology for all different services. People do it. So you're basically just arguing my point that the copyright's the reason you have to have a physical thing. And if we just change that, the physical thing is not necessary.
But the thing is, I think you put the cart before the horse. I don't think that you can get rid of – you can't say, oh, if we just get rid of the copyright, then we don't have to worry about this. Mm-hmm. It's you have to keep on to that physical media until the copyright vendors come around. And make it more convenient.
And that kind of movement, I think, is much slower than technological movement, right?
Yeah, yeah. Legal, like, I mean, copyright's gotten kind worse of legislation, in the last 30, 40 years since the VHS, right?
Yeah, definitely. So I don't think it's realistic to say, all right, when this whole issue that we're dealing with copyright and everything and is moot, I don't think it will be moot in at least in 10 years. Maybe not.
Assumption is that almost all music is sold digitally now. Almost all video stuff is served to you in some way. The DVD selling and buying feature set is getting smaller every year. So won't that terminate at some point?
Companies,
10 years out, 20 years out, 30 years?
You do have to say, I do have to say that companies are using things like Blu-ray in servers and whatnot. So it's not just a consumer's perspective,
That's good.
Right?
That's good, yeah.
Yeah. There's also the issue of quality. And while the providers may try to get as high quality as possible, maybe I don't care about it. Maybe it's an older movie. Maybe it's an animated flick.
Well, nostalgically, it'd be nice to watch a VHS Disney film, maybe.
Yeah, or I may decide that the quality doesn't matter to me as much as long as it gets past a certain minimum threshold. Let's say I'm watching the movie Primer. You know, it's not a high definition movie by any means, and so I can rip that and have a 400 megabyte file, as opposed to trying to get a 1080p style video, which is going to run me in the multiple gigabytes, and then I can have more of these movies ready to go on whatever storage device and have backups of it very easily, and that ends up being more flexible for me.
All right.
I like being able to have that flexibility to say, like, I don't care if this movie that was made in the 80s is not 1080p because it wasn't 1080p when it came out.
Hey, you know what ended less than 20 years ago?
What did end less than 20 years ago?
Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Your favorite Star Trek series.
My favorite Star Trek. Oh, also, guess what? Guess what is in standard definition and was never remastered to HD?
The Next Generation, right?
No, Next Generation was remastered to HD. They actually went into the film archives and found all the original footage and like digitized it.
You were talking about original classic Star Trek?
That one was as well, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but I was talking about, again, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Also, what's the best Star Trek there is?
I remember the catchphrase is, or the intro text is, to boldly sit where no one has sat before.
Right,
that's
right.
Deep Space Nine, right?
That's what all the haters say.
Yeah.
That's what all the people who haven't watched the show say.
I've watched a lot of the show and I like it.
Yeah.
But
Next Generation. Everything is hunky-dory in our world, but every once in a while we run into some problems.
And the problems are always outside the ship.
Yeah.
We're fine.
Deep Space Nine, there are going to be some crippling things coming and you can't just shake this off.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a long-term arc. Anyway, the reason that I bring
I wasn't thinking of the arc. I was thinking of implanting 30 years of prison sentence into your head and you just have to live with it.
Oh, yeah, that was an episode.
Okay, nerd alert. Nerd alert.
Briefly, that episode was one of the many where this one particular character, Miles O'Brien.
Got a raw deal.
Right. Like,
over and over again.
Every season, there's the O'Brien Must Suffer episode. And the reason that they did it was because Cole Meany, the actor, was just such a nice, like, happy-go-lucky, but like a nice, honest, hardworking guy, and everyone could resonate with him, so they just put him through hell.
So then temporal mechanics causes him to die of cancer, and then double
spoiler
ends up
alert.
Actually
okay,
living
okay,
with
stop,
the
stop, yeah. Stop, stop. Okay. I love it. Wonderful, guys. Continue.
That's for this
Your
is like
Star
for the
Trek
end
story,
of the show, right?
Granted that Deep Space Nine is an amazing show. Go on.
My Star Trek story is it's not that deep. Okay, a couple things. First of all, there is a new Star Trek movie. I saw it. Meh.
Okay. No spoilers here. That's all we'll
Don't
say.
Don't worry.
All right.
Anyway, also there was a trailer released for the documentary film For the Love of Spock, which is being put together by Leonard Nimoy's son.
Cool.
So I'm really kind of looking forward to that.
I'm sure it'll be amazing.
Also, thirdly, there is a new Star Trek television series coming out sometime next year, which
is
covered,
really exciting.
We've talked about. It's exciting. I'm going to keep my hopes super low because, you know, that's the only way to not be hurt.
Is there any other Star Trek news, Ben?
Yeah. Regarding that television show, it's a CBS series. If you're in the U.S., you have to, like, what is it called? CBS All Access, whatever. It's a digital subscription thing, and you have to subscribe to it to see the show. But something really cool is happening. I'd like to thank you personally for this, Lyle, because I'm sure this was your doing, that Netflix is sending it all around the world within 24 hours of the original broadcast for all of their markets except for the U.S. and Canada. The U.S. has to go through CBS's thing, which, regrettably, I will buy. Canada, well, I don't know what the Canadians have to do to get this
it's
show.
Probably also on
it's probably
internet, Canada
be,
yeah.
Anyway, that'll be
but if you're outside the U.S. and Canada,
you actually get to see it within 24 hours of its original broadcast
if you're paying for Netflix,
which is really cool because you don't see that as often, right? With movie releases, with television shows, so that's
so you
cool.
Could just wait like a month and then fly to Mexico and watch four episodes and then fly back.
I have a question. So You're not supposed to like change your geolocation, and Netflix has been cracking down on that.
Mm-hmm.
Could you hook me up? Just kidding.
No, I cannot. Speaking of which, on Facebook, I was wondering if...
Oh, no.
Wait, beforehand though, just because you brought up CBS All Access.
Is that their streaming service?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to take this opportunity to say that I hate it.
Oh, why?
Oh, with a passion.
Because
I had
no
family coming
yet.
To town, and we had heard, you know, you heard through the grapevine that
wait, a video
John
streaming
Stewart,
service is not Netflix that you hate? Go on.
Wow.
That Jon Stewart was going to be on The Colbert Show, and
right.
Or The
oh
Late
my
Show
God.
With Stephen
was he?
Colbert. Yes. And at the same time, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, it's like CBS All Access is like $6 a month or something like that. And I'm thinking, like, Stephen Colbert just by himself is kind of worth that.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? Everything else kind of cream on top of that. This is what I want. And so we're going to give it a shot. It's a 7-day trial.
Okay.
Turn it on. It's got commercials. Tons and tons of commercials. It's like watching the TV.
And you can't fast forward them, right?
Right. The standard TV station, you know, over the air station.
That's what I couldn't stand about Hulu.
Right. Oh, but you can't like time shift, so you can't get a DVR to be able to get past it. It's hard coded into it with, you know, when watching on a Roku, for example, which I was. And then, yes, I'm still bitter. And then after watching for about an hour or so, it would crash. Roku would just stop and reboot. And you might think like, oh, well, maybe that's the problem with the Roku. No other channel on my Roku does this.
Okay, so
you're passionate about this.
So yes, first off, let's just I want to shame them as much about whatever executive at CBS thought this was a good idea. I want you to be shamed.
Can we talk about digital television for a second?
Sure.
Do you remember when digital television came out?
Yeah.
Broadcast? Uh-huh. So right now, your televisions have antennas still. And you can hook up an antenna, and where you guys live, you can get CBS over
actually,
the air.
The newest ones don't. A lot of the newest ones don't have any tuner.
Really?
Yeah.
No tuner.
They can come without a tuner.
Wow.
They'll come with smart TVs.
But if you have a tuner, you can pick up CBS most
and
of the time.
You can't necessarily see if you have a tuner. I mean, if you think about the rabbit ears on top of the television, like now you can have televisions that have antennas, but they're inside of the television.
Right. Yeah. In any case, and the other thing to note is that cable companies sometimes have deals where if you buy cable, you get certain things. If you don't buy cable, they still inject some stuff on that line. And some of those things on the line are like radio. So your non-paid cable line that comes to your house, theoretically, you can get FM radio off of it. So there is other ways of doing this. So if you're curious about getting CBS, you really should investigate non-network based.
No, but see, then I have to watch it when it comes out. And I just assume.
You don't have a TiVo?
I just as soon – no, I don't. But
you know what you could do? You could wait until they release the 30-year DVD collection of show.
You know what I can do is I can wait 12 hours
it's on YouTube.
For any really, really fun episode of whatever I want to watch to show up on YouTube.
Yep. They all show up on YouTube. That's how I watch Colbert. But sometimes it's actually their station putting in little bits.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's just full stuff.
And like I said, I'd be willing to pay the money. But – $6 a month is like a non-trivial chunk of what Netflix costs, and all I'm getting is CBS.
Yeah.
It's CBS funny. Has got a lot of content though.
On the one hand, it's only $6 a month. That's like a burrito. That's like one burrito a month.
Says the man who's
employed. A burrito that crashes on a regular basis.
Okay, first off, your relationship, you're in my relationship started over burritos.
Yes.
We both knew the same burrito shop in Santa Cruz.
Now imagine
LA.
Taking 2 bites of burrito and then having to wait to watch an ad before you continue.
I swear to you, I didn't realize at this moment that both of you have used burrito as a basis for currency.
Yeah.
Ben, you've done it for years. But I recall you used to do that too, Miles.
Yes.
Burrito amounts. Do you guys know that you both do that?
Well, yeah. Now we do.
That's creepy.
Now we do.
Jalapeno super
so
burrito
mole. $6 is a cheap burrito, I have to say.
$6 used to be a pricey burrito.
It's a standard burrito.
Now it's a standard burrito.
No, I think you get a $12 burrito now.
Where are you going for burritos?
I don't eat burritos. I don't know. They're too expensive.
The whole point behind a burrito is that
it's cheap.
Rice and beans and cheese and maybe some chicken.
I see. The seams in your knowledge are
track,
showing.
We've lost track completely. Well, I've never used the burrito as a basis for currency, so I guess that's why I can't assess the price.
Fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
I understand.
So you were saying that CBS's $6 price isn't worth it for you, especially with the commercials.
I was saying... On the one hand, and don't interrupt me this time, on the one hand, it's $6. That's like a burrito. On the other hand, when you compare it to other things that offer similar things, then it's a lot.
I think I want a new currency, burrito coin.
Burrito coin.
You know what's a bummer, actually, is, never mind. I just realized
You don't think it's a bummer anymore. That's good. All right.
Yeah. It's only kind of a bummer and not worth
it. You should blame it. You're like, pancakes that are dry. Yeah, that's a bummer. That's true, Ben.
There's a lot of things that are bummers, but
you know what's a bummer? I gotta say, when Miles doesn't tell me what his stories are,
I was just gonna say, you no don't know what the story is. It says Miles ??
What? I put all the stories in there. It's up to you which one you want to have.
Oh my God, they're down there! Holy moly!
You have.
I didn't know which one you wanted to do.
Let's talk about 7-Eleven.
You want to hear about 7-Eleven?
Yeah, do they have burritos?
7-Eleven does have burritos.
Would you eat them?
I have eaten them.
And?
I was much more poor. I was making $7 an hour.
So you could buy one burrito an hour?
No. Actually, those burritos were something like 50 cents a piece.
Please tell me what 7-Eleven's doing.
Small burritos.
7-Eleven just used a drone to do a delivery, a food delivery. Slurpees and a chicken sandwich.
Slurpees. How do you deliver a Slurpee? How many Slurpees?
I don't know how many.
Is this like a real business project, or is this like a really cool employee at 7-Eleven going, this would be awesome?
I have thought about this a lot, actually. Not in the context of Slurpees and drones, but in the context of so when I was biking a lot, you go somewhere, you pick up, let's say, a burrito and a horchata, and you want to get home. But if you think about it, if you ride while holding the horchata in one hand and steering in the other hand, you can't brake, because if you try and brake, you'll turn and you'll go over. So I've been thinking a lot about, like, how do you attach a drink to an object that moves erratically? And I have not come up with a very good answer.
Don't you put a lid on the top, the drink?
Well, yeah, of course you put a lid. But I mean, like, if you have a swinging thing, then it hits the handlebars and, you know.
But a drone flying behind you that just always stays the same distance.
That's true.
I was actually thinking you order online to say, have the drone delivered to me. This was happening in Reno, Nevada, by the way. And they surveyed.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me.
They surveyed some households within a 1 mile radius of the 7-Eleven and said, hey, would you be comfortable having a robot deliver your stuff?
No, so they're really doing it.
Yeah, and so people said,
sales have increased.
So they,
1 square mile at a time.
They partnered with the company Flirty, which is a drone delivery company. Mm-hmm. So they outsourced. It's
cool.
Not 7-Eleven branded drones. It's, you know. And it's FAA approved, and it's delivery to a home of you know.
Junk food.
Yeah. I was going to say of groceries, but
you know, a burrito would really be an easier thing to serve than a sandwich or a...
Wait a second. Within a 1 mile radius of a 7-Eleven, I think like
that covers a lot of land.
No, that's true. But like, if you're within a 1 mile radius, you should just walk to 7-Eleven.
Have you been to Reno, Nevada? It's really hot this time
of year. Oh, never mind. Okay, sorry, I forgot it was Reno.
Have you been to America? People don't walk.
If it's not on wheels,
this is the man
I'm
from
not
Southern California.
It. Yeah.
Hey, this is Geek Speak, and I'm talking to Ben and Miles, and I'm Lyle. And let's talk about home automation, Ben.
Oh, I am so excited about this.
Now, quite a while ago, you showed me that we could turn on your heater on and off in your house from a webpage that was not secure.
And you asked me on the show, do you have to log in?
Yeah.
And I said, not yet. And that was actually my incentive for adding authentication before the show came out.
Oh, cool.
And it worked. So,
what kind of authentication are you using?
The heater. It's Google OAuth.
Yeah, cool.
So secure and super easy. That has since stopped working. Also, my doorbell was going through the same system. So when you rang my doorbell, it would contact this piece of circuitry, which would connect up to Firebase, change a flag, which would then be detected by some other thing, which would play a sound. It was just really dumb.
The most complicated way to play sound
like,
ever.
I needed internet access to know if someone rang my doorbell. Like, it's
and to be true,
and electricity.
And to be true, your door is actually far enough from your house. You can't knock on it. You do need electrical means.
Yeah,
because
there's a gate, an external gate. So anyway, finally though, after all that work and after things just not really working very well and always breaking and everything, finally my home automation setup is finally coming together because I'm not doing any of it myself. I bought an Amazon Alexa.
Dude.
I bought a couple Wemo switches or whatever they're called. And it just works really, really, really well. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's funny. That reminds me. I was doing a bunch of research into figuring out how to make my house/farm chores easier. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, making sure the animals have water. So I was like, oh, well, how do I do the sensors with an Arduino to be able to determine what's the water level, and then
I've got some of those sensors
on,
if you want some.
Yeah, then engage a solenoid so that it
fill
can
fill the bowl.
Yeah, let water. Mm-hmm. And I discussed this with my wife, and she quite correctly said, "Why don't you just get a float switch?"
Yeah, yeah, like every farm in America has.
Right, exactly. And it's like you spend so much time in the computer world that you know. If
everything
you
is
have,
a CS problem.
Yeah, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah, exactly.
In a float switch, of course, just like on the back of every toilet,
yes.
Everywhere.
Yes.
One thing, though,
and don't require electricity, and don't require any infrastructure.
Nope. Just gravity and water. We got lots of that, especially when you need water. To feed your aunt, drink your aunt.
Gravity doesn't turn off randomly.
No, it's just
like
there.
The internet does.
Do you have rat problems at your farm?
I don't.
No,
wait,
we have.
I don't have a farm. I'm kidding.
We got stray cats or feral cats. Used as barn cats.
I need some of your cats.
No, they're. Oh, you don't. You can go places to get stray cats that they get neutered by the local agencies or the
I've been thinking about doing
control.
This.
But many of these cats are not domestic, as it were. They're not totally friendly. And so they have a choice of they can euthanize these cats or for people that are willing to take care of them, like put out food on a regular basis. And we have them in cages for the first 2 weeks so they get acclimated to being in our house at our place and know it as their territory. And then we let them loose and we used to have a rat problem and it was gone overnight.
But now you have how many cats?
Two.
And do they go to the bathroom in the tomato beds?
Not in the tomato beds. We actually, no, actually we have a litter box and they do use that.
All right. Okay. I'm going to have to go forward on the cat thing because right now the rats are just overbearing the chicken coops. Let's move back to automation. This reminded me. So the reason why this kind of engagement.
I love how we're a tech show and here are the low tech solutions to all the common problems.
So I got, so we actually had a trap for rats, but a skunk hit it. And we know the skunk reached its hand in and it shocked itself. It lived. Mm-hmm. But it sprayed the box, so now the rats aren't going into, which is kind of interesting. But anyway, then I went ahead and got
maybe
a sensor.
That ally thing.
Then I went ahead and got a motion sensor for the purpose of seeing if I could spot if it was a family of skunks or one skunk, and also just to know if they come back because we sending out our dog is not such a good idea when there's a skunk. So I wanted to know when the skunk came around. So I got a motion detector, and I almost bought the expensive one that would connect to my Alexa / Echo, but decided not to.
Oh, you have an Echo too?
And just got what?
Do you have an Echo as well?
I did.
Oh, wow.
I love that you asked the question Echo, but no one said Echo. In any case, I love the Echo, and I almost bought that unit, and I almost bought lights for controlling the Echo. Like, I kind of want to engage in that space, so I'm curious.
Yeah, so there's this thing called the Alexa Skills Kit. Alexa is the name of the service, I guess. So you say, Alexa, turn on my air conditioner.
You just messed up listeners, but go
on.
Oh,
yeah. I probably just triggered some Alexas just now. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, did it
some Echoes. I'll say Echo now. But anyway, there's the skills kit.
Alexa, send money to GeekSpeak.
Oh, stop it.
You know, actually, you can have it respond to Alexia, which is not really the word, or the Echo word. It also works.
Yeah,
so it depends on which way you're
Amazon,
setting.
Amazon, Echo, or Alexa.
So now we've just messed up everybody.
Now we've got everyone. Anyway, so I've been looking into, like, what can I do as a developer?
Oh, so that's what you mean by skills kit.
Like, to make this better. Yeah, so the Alexa skills kit is basically a
SDK.
It's an SDK, a software development kit, but basically a way for you to program the service. Now, that's actually the thing is it's not actually programming the device. It's programming the service and the cloud. So all of your code runs on Amazon service on the cloud. So when you say the trigger word, then it starts streaming the audio up to the cloud and all the magic and all the stuff happens in the cloud.
And of course, a big part of the service is that it parses the meaning out of some of the audio. So you as a service provider actually get fragments of text that you can then act upon. Helps you a little
bit. Not me.
Oh, you.
So if I program it, no, I don't get any audio.
No, you don't get audio.
I get
translated
text,
meaning, if you will. Yeah.
Anyway, I actually haven't gotten deep into it enough to be able to answer any of the questions that you're kind of half posing.
I'm curious too. Yeah.
But it's something like that. But the interesting thing that I found is because you're programming the service and you're not programming the device, there are certain things you can't do. So, for example, if you want to run some code and then say play a sound or play some music or tell Alexa to do something. In your house, you can't do that from the cloud because you're programming the service. You're not programming the device. So, for example, you could make it so that way you as the user say, hey, Alexa, do blah, 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 blah. And then it does something in response to you. But you couldn't say like, hey, start my morning routine. And then it does this thing for 4 minutes, and then it does this thing for 2 minutes, and then thing for 1 minute. There are some ways to hack that together. But actually, my big thing is I want to say, hey, I want to, hey, Echo or whatever, I want to take the 8 a.m. bus. And it's actually not an 8 a.m. bus. It's a 7:55 bus, and right. I really want the Echo to set an alarm for 7:45 so I can catch it. So, like, I want to create a shorthand for that stuff, but I can't actually do that because I can't set alarms programmatically. So it's lot of interesting little things like that. Where it's,
I want a push feature too, meaning I have a service that then sends a message to Echo. Because what constantly happens with my family is they're all around the house and there might be a phone or something, but the phone might not be by the kids. And we don't have a house phone, right? So if I want to call the house, I don't have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
But there's this speaker that everyone listens to all the time. So what I've turned up doing is I can actually cause it to play music. Mm-hmm. So I just tell Maggie that if she hears like really loud rock and roll coming from the kitchen spontaneously, she could contact me. So that's our message. I just start rock and roll.
Does that happen often?
It's happened a couple times now. But I do want that too. The other thing, you could do something that Miles and I'm sorry. Let's see. This is Miles. That's Ben. Brian and I last week in Vegas were talking about
we're all the same to you.
This project where they took audio and scrambled it such that the voice receiving software could still hear it and understand it, but humans couldn't because of the noise canceling effects. So you could theoretically record all the commands you actually want to run in that, and then scramble them so you can't understand them and have them played in your room.
I'll give you one better.
Mm.
So the Alexa, it's the Echo, you can buy a remote. By the way, if you have an Echo, I'm so sorry for this segment because I keep triggering your home device. But yeah, it comes with a remote. Sorry, it doesn't come with. You can buy a remote. It's like $30 or something like that. And the way the remote works is you press the button and you talk into the remote.
Yes.
So you, I'll bet, as a hardware geek, you're thinking about this, right?
So you could trigger that button and have the audio button, be played into it.
So someone got a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
Connected one of the pins to one of the contacts on the inside of the remote so that way they could make the button appear to have been pressed.
Sure.
And then they put an earbud over the top of the microphone. And then they used text-to-speech on the Raspberry Pi. So the Raspberry Pi would say, Alexa, blah, 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 blah.
That's such a hack. I love it.
Yeah. And you can also say, Alexa, Simon says, Geek Speak is awesome. And then Alexa will go, Geek Speak is awesome.
So she'll say, Geek Speak is awesome.
Yeah.
She has no intonation at all.
She's okay. Yeah. Anyway.
By the way, if you teach children to do that,
it's creepy.
It's a long, tiring evening with them telling to shut up and things of that nature.
Oh, no.
Awesome. Well, tell me if you start hacking the remote and get voice controls, automation of Echo in that, if you do that.
There's one other direction I don't know much about, but I think you also might be able to pair a Bluetooth microphone to it.
A
Bluetooth microphone. But it's really, really hard to search for how do I make my MacBook Pro send audio as a Bluetooth microphone, because all of those terms, like, it'll come up with all the...
So you want your laptop to act as a Bluetooth microphone to the... I don't know if that's going to work.
That way I can, like, send something up
easily.
Soundflower, a fake audio device, and then pipe that through to... Anyway. So...
I think it's time to get over to your house and start hacking. This is
fun.
A
lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this.
All right. And keep in mind that if you're going to pick up a Raspberry Pi in the area... In this area, in Los Gatos, you can swing by Fry's as Miles just did.
Gosh, yeah, man. I was in Fry's. I hadn't been in Fry's for years.
Of course, for people outside of California, Fry's was a grocery
Fry's
store
electronics.
And then turned into an electronics store. And it's kind of all over the place in Silicon Valley.
All of their stores are themed.
Yes,
every single different one of them is themed in a different way.
Yeah.
And they have so many cash registers, and they're almost very, very few of them are always open because we're not in the era anymore of people going to the store. Because
everybody buys stuff on Amazon.
Yeah. Prior to buying all my stuff online, I used to go to Fry's on
all
a semi-regular basis.
Sure.
I could go to see what was there. And it was famous for you never want to have to ask a question there.
Yes,
so if
this
you know,
is true.
So if you know about computers, it was great. It was a candy shop. You go like, oh, what's this one doing? What's this one doing? But then you'd also be walking down the aisles and you see someone who didn't know what was going on and having a technician or a salesperson try to help them, and you'd hear them talking like, that's not how it works.
That's just all
you
wrong.
You want to get this hard drive because it's a little thinner.
No, they're the same
size. The blue one has more RAM.
Oh, man.
Once I made the mistake of someone said, can I help you? And I thought, oh, well, I know exactly what I'm looking for. And there are a lot of hard drives and I don't know which, like where in these three aisles it is. Sure, I'm looking for this specific hard drive. That was a mistake. I should have just walked around.
It's a lot more threadbare than I remember. For example, it used to be the parking lots were always full.
Yeah.
You always had to try to struggle to find a parking spot.
There's a parking garage next to mine.
So, will Fry's Electronics still be around in 40 years?
I have no idea, but they are matching internet prices now. And a surprise that I had when I went in there was looking at Raspberry Pi. I just bought a Raspberry Pi 3 and, you know, for the price that it costs on Amazon, and was surprised to find that they were selling Raspberry Pi 3s at cost, like $35.
Wait, is that the price on Amazon? That's not cost then. I mean, there's some money being made. Yeah. It's the same price you can get anywhere else. You can't find it. It's not a hard, huge markup that you'd expect from a retail store.
I don't know that I've ever seen a Raspberry Pi for sale less than $35.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
I was thinking like, oh, it'll be, you know, $45 or whatever is – because, I mean, Amazon was marking
them
up.
Did you buy this Raspberry Pi to control the water flow in your chicken feeder?
No. As a matter of fact, I did it so that I could have a backup server for GeekSpeak.
Awesome. I love that. All right. I think the big one to talk about a little bit today, we got some more time on the show. First, tell us, Ben, let's start with the sale. Tell us about what's going on with Yahoo, Miles.
Well, Yahoo got sold to Verizon.
For how much?
$4.8 billion.
That's all?
That was not how much Yahoo used to be worth.
More like $48 billion.
You keep going up.
Bigger than
really?
That.
Really? Jeez.
Yes.
Was it like 150-ish?
Somewhere thereabouts. I remember it being...
$125 billion.
There you go.
Just found it, yeah. $125 billion to $4.83 billion. That's...
Wait. Does this include Yahoo shares of Alibaba? Because Alibaba is...
It does not include the Alibaba.
Oh, okay, because that's worth more than that. Mm-hmm. Alibaba is the Amazon of Asia. It's the best way to say it.
Well, the Amazon plus eBay.
Yeah, Amazon and eBay and all ways of buying anything in China, for example. And Yahoo actually owns a pretty large stake in it. How do you sell the company if you don't include that?
How do you chop up a company and sell only bits of it?
So they're just selling bits of it. So there's still going to be Yahoo that owns those shares? There's still going to be some form of Yahoo that exists, I guess, if they're not doing the full sale.
I don't know the technical details of it. All I know is that
They're breaking also up the Yahoo Japan. So, in Japan, Yahoo is actually a major player still, as I recall.
The company that does still contain Yahoo's Asian assets, part of the company, including Alibaba, will be where Marissa Mayer will be.
Still running things.
Yeah, still running things.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, okay, so she done a good job for selling most of the company at $4.8 billion?
I think Yahoo was struggling. Going to be an issue beforehand. The question when Marissa Mayer came in was Yahoo going to be a tech company or was it going to be a media company?
Right. And is Verizon buying it because it's a media company? Because that's what most of it's worth, right? It's got a massive share of news eyeballs, if you will.
There's a question because, I mean, most of what Yahoo has now is, email and the finance and the news.
And their whole sports division, they've got a lot of people playing, virtual sports stuff. Any case, it's kind of a big thing for me just in the feeling of like knowing Yahoo is this massive thing that went down and still having a little bit of love for Yahoo. I remember I did a show years ago and I had a developer from Yahoo come on and he was talking about how he's going to talk about other things. I said, no, just talk about what you're doing at Yahoo. I think people still have a fondness for Yahoo. And so he talked about one of their open source projects and it was fascinating. And it was partially because all the developers in the room kind of have this love relationship for Yahoo, that big yellow and purple.
It's like a love-hate-love relationship.
Kind of, yeah. There's some nostalgia there, I guess, for Yahoo. So there's no nostalgia for Verizon.
Oh, yeah.
If I was Verizon, I'd change the name. Just keep Yahoo as the name. Because, I mean, telcos, ugh. It is a big move, though, for them to spend so much money on it. And it's not uncommon for this kind of thing. AT&T does this, too, right? Doesn't Verizon own AOL, too?
Actually, AT&T was a separate company, and they were bought by SBC Global. SBC Global was the larger one that bought AT&T and then took the AT&T name.
Right. That's right. I remember SBC Global.
And Verizon does own AOL.
Right. Time Warner. Aero Time Warner, or do they just... Anyway. Not exact. The business side of tech, obviously, was not our strong point. We definitely
get
into the tech
side. $4.4 billion.
All right. AOL. So, and Verizon's doing a new thing, too, with data.
Oh, yeah. Verizon also... Well, I've got two more things, which are that Verizon... So, Verizon's been trying to deal with this problem of, like, having a relatively small number of customers who are on their unlimited plan, which is what it's actually called, the unlimited plan, which was maybe a marketing idea that I just hate that they did.
Wait, why?
Well, because first of all, you can't actually have unlimited data because you have a speed that you're downloading at, right?
And you have one device.
And you have one device, so your cap is really that. But beyond that, they don't really, they're not really selling an unlimited plan. They're selling a big plan, which we're calling something. We're going to call
that's
it
a rollover that's maximum of 100 gigabytes.
Right. So now what they're, so basically they were saying, like, for a while they were saying, okay, you're a heavy user, so we're going to throttle you. So meaning not throttle like strangle, but throttle like decrease your usage so you can only use it at a slower rate. Right.
Right.
And then there were net neutrality rules, and so they couldn't do that. So now they have a formal new policy, which is that they are going to disconnect the heaviest users, like basically say, yeah, we're not going to
give you service anymore.
Buy a business
plan.
But
you can buy a business plan if you want for this much money. So that's kind of a bummer. I do understand their issue, but I kind of feel like they shot themselves in the foot by calling it an unlimited plan. Like, it's not. Also, they are going to soon be charging a fee if you're using one of their older routers. So you know how they'll give you a router to use or
for DSL,
you can
or
buy one of their routers for their internet customers.
Okay.
So they're going to start charging people who are using
older for DSL. I thought it was for FiOS.
So, I'm sorry. Yeah, for FiOS.
Oh, okay.
They're going to start...
Sorry, fiber optics.
Fiber optics, yeah. So they're going to start charging users $2.80 per month.
If they use their old router?
Because they're using an old router.
Which for text support?
I don't know. What they said is something like to ensure we deliver the best support. But I feel like that's part of the cost.
They're saying it's when it's connecting to their infrastructure, it can cause older devices can cause some problems because it's in a non-uniform speed going for endpoints.
See, my trust meter just goes up.
I know exactly.
They should replace those devices for those users.
Well, even if they, I mean, I'm sure they would
if it's causing them problems for a fee, right? Yeah.
I was actually thinking I could use an older Doxis cable modem with my service. Just means that I'd be capped, the maximum speed I could have wouldn't be what the service was offering.
Yeah.
But they don't charge me for that.
Right. It's a bummer that they now will a little. It's only $2.80, and they're hoping that a lot of people will say that and just pay it. Anyway, yay Verizon.
This is like
the dark section in the middle of the episode.
Yeah, that is a little sad. I mean, every time we talk about telcos, I mean, it's just not a lot of...
Yeah. You know, actually, it's rare that we have three stories about one telco.
Right. Normally, they do things, all of them do evil things at once.
Oh, now ITT.
So, I don't know how much we want to get into this. Miles, I'm going to go ahead and offer you to look up some of your other news stories.
There's one I want to do.
Okay, good.
We can end on a light note.
Okay, good. I just wanted to mention this because there's quite a bit of talk about it, and that is that... there's some recently, like 20,000 emails were stolen from the Democratic National Committee, and they were published on WikiLeaks. And when I say stolen, I shouldn't say stolen. They were captured, grabbed.
No, they were stolen.
Well, stolen theft is different.
Okay.
Than piracy, right?
Well,
Well, if I take something from you and it's physical, you no longer have it. That's
right.
Theft.
There's the physical argument.
If I get a copy of your stuff, that's not theft. That's espionage. It's something else.
Well, espionage is the act of theft that's state-sponsored. Like it's
well, no, it's, that's the thing. It isn't theft if the person that doesn't lose anything.
If there's some blueprints of some special thing in some foreign country and you go and you take
a copy of them,
pictures of them, you are stealing those plans. Yes, it is not
the physical thing, but you're stealing the intellectual property.
Yeah, you're not you're not depriving the original of the original company of the original.
I get that. I get
that.
It's
still considered theft.
I don't. I just think what's the definition of theft? I think theft is. I think
that. I'm looking that up right now.
Yeah, I think that it's piracy is a better way to describe it. I think there should be.
Oh, I hate the word. I think piracy is not that.
There should be
piracy. Very much feels like you're taking it away from.
There should be a different term for copying something.
I agree with you because it's not clearly in this definition, in any of these definitions.
Let me hear theft.
Oh, I could read the whole thing if you want. I mean, it's pretty long. I mean,
No. Please don't read all 30,000 emails.
Take the opportunity to give or share a kiss when it's not expected or when people are not watching
is
totally one of them.
You just chose that one.
Yeah. So take another person's property without permission or legal right and without intending to return it.
Right.
Meaning...
Right.
Implying
See, so
you're
it's
depriving
not theft.
It.
It's taking data is not theft if the copy is left.
Anyway,
so in any
we've
case,
gone down the rabbit hole. What are you talking about?
Recently, 20,000 documents were copied.
Appropriated. Yeah.
From the DNC and then released on WikiLeaks. Now, this is not an uncommon thing for a whole bunch of data to be grabbed from someplace and released on WikiLeaks. That's kind of what WikiLeaks is kind of about, kind of showing some transparency. And there's some really embarrassing things in there, of course, right? Like infighting amongst members, the Democratic officials talking about how they're going to kind of use Bernie Sanders' religious convictions against him in the South. Like there's some stuff that is like, oh, that's kind of dirty. I mean, basically politics, right? Mm-hmm. It's what you'd expect for
it's showing how the sausage is made.
Right. I mean, politics are just nasty. And in any case, this was released, and the timeline of this is kind of suspicious in the sense that it was right before the committee, the Democratic National Committee, which is happening. What is it called when they actually pull in the delegates?
The
convention. The convention, which is happening as we speak. In any case, it looks like with some analysis that this was actually potentially done by a Russian governmental organization that grabbed these documents and released them.
Mm-hmm.
And examples of why they think that is that the actual group has names, and those groups have things like it looks like they take Russian holidays. They're not active during the Russian holidays. And also they seem to have a work schedule, which is UTC 3 time zone, which happens to be Moscow and St. Petersburg. Mm-hmm. So it looks like, and people have kind of assumed that for a while, that these groups that have operated in different ways are Russian-backed groups. Why they might be doing this is, of course, assumed potentially that Russia actually wants one of the political organizations to get a president, and potentially this actually hurts the Democrats.
Yeah, this.
But I never know if this kind of thing is true.
This is a back and forth. Yeah. This is a – it shows every sign of a foreign government actively taking part in the elections of the United States. There's a part of me that says – hey, fair is fair. The United States, you've been messing with other people's elections for a long, long time. But it also brings into the notion of the purpose of WikiLeaks, which – or at least the stated purpose of WikiLeaks, which is to expose corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And they succeeded with regard to those emails. I mean, corruption was definitely one of the things that is at issue.
Yep.
Even though the Democratic National Party is not – a governmental organization, they are a private organization, there is a very blurry line there.
They're very connected. I mean, yeah. I mean, you can't really – I mean, the members of it are political
technically,
political figures, right?
Yeah, so, technically it's a private organization, mm-hmm. but it's a private organization for the sole purpose of taking governmental power.
Right.
So it's a very curious little – I don't know. Potpourri of techno morality going on.
Well, first off, I kind of like the idea of transparency. I think that it's kind of nice. I mean, I do appreciate that human beings to be functional and sane need privacy. Like, and secrets and privacy is not the same thing. That great quote from, or I'll butcher it, but. The general idea that what I do in the bathroom is not a secret, but it is private. Privacy without secrecy is fine. There's actually something true and about being human where you need to be private.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the same as being secret. So to some degree, secrets in politics kind of upset me. I like the idea of transparency. especially in corporations and in large movements of what people are doing, more transparency seems good to me. Mm-hmm.
That's why so many people are upset about Citizens United, that whole lack of transparency with regard to where money is coming from.
Exactly. I'd like that not to exist. I'd like to have that completely be transparent, because I feel like even if we have kind of disgusting, embarrassing things, as we bring them to the light, you start seeing what real humanity is. And you can get a better picture on what the world really is.
Yeah, was it Thurgood Marshall that said sunlight is the greatest disinfectant?
Oh, really? That's a good quote. In any case, so I like that this is coming out and coming about. It's a little weird that it's coming, you know, from a state attack to some degree. And if it is a state attack, there's a really interesting like sideline of this is if Russia were to sink a ship of ours, that would be an act of war. It's very, very clear. If they attack a non-corporate entity, obviously not. A non-governmental entity, obviously not a act of war, because it's just a private group potentially, right? This is that borderline. If some other country attacked our infrastructure and shut down our electrical grid or our ability to fly planes, that potentially could be an act of war. Like the boundaries get very close. So this is a this is a gray space that we kind of have to become aware of and bring policies around to understand how we're going to react, because we could react flippantly.
If they shut down or if they shot down commercial airplanes, act of war, and it was an act of war, but it's also private industry. So the
boundaries are
the
very
Democratic
unclear.
National Committee is, in my opinion, definitely closer to being a government entity than American Airlines is.
Right. Yeah, I kind of see that. I mean, of course, we subsidize the airline industry. We pay a lot of money to make sure it works and functions as part of our infrastructure and transportation. So it's very important to our, you know, our government running well, our whole society running well. But I agree with you that it's definitely attacking one of our major political organizations is kind of close to attacking how our structure works. But at the same time, all they're doing is bringing sunlight, right? They're only showing what's real.
Yeah. And sunlight,
in some ways, there's nothing wrong with that. I kind of like that aspect of it.
Yeah. And sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants is actually Justice Louis Brandeis, not
Louis Brandeis. I'm not familiar with Brandeis.
Oh, then you need to read his stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really good?
Yeah.
All right. I think we're wrapping it up. Did you want to end with a good note? Just keep that in mind. Well, I'm good to do it right now. Go for it.
Yes. If any of you are like me and from every once in a while read comic books on media devices like a phone or a tablet or a small tablet, you'll find that you need to pinch and zoom an awful lot and pan around to try to read all the text because it ends up being so small. Well, some folks at Google were working on this problem, and they used machine learning to figure out when you see a particular panel, where the speech bubbles are.
Oh, so you're talking about scanned traditional comic books?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, when you go on to, for example, Google Play Books, you can buy comic books on there, and they're in electronic form.
And a traditional graphic novel where you've got multiple panels in different areas and speech bubbles, and they're relatively hard to read when they're open and you're not familiar with the
form. Well, the graphics are fine usually. You're looking at the panel and you're like, oh, okay, there's the page, and it's fine. But yes, the text can get very small. So what happens is if you tap on the screen now with them, it will figure out that this is one of the zones that there is a speech bubble, and it will zoom out that speech bubble so that you can read the text, and then you tap someplace else, and it goes back, and you can.
Oh, it doesn't even zoom the entire thing. It just takes the speech bubble.
Just the speech bubble.
Very cool.
So I'll show you a quick little animation. Oh, yeah, when you go online to the site, you can see what it looks like.
Very cool. We'll have this up at geekspeak.org. So reading comics. So do you do a lot of reading comics?
I don't do a lot, but especially not on the electronic devices because it was so painful.
But now maybe. Hey, GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission, and GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. Use our stuff any way you'd like. Just let them know that we made it. Thanks to our intern, Chandler, who's sitting very politely, quietly in the corner. Thank you, Chandler. And also Greg Merkley, who provided this week's working title, How Many Burritos to Automate a VCR? Theme song by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. And thank you for being here with episode 30 of our 16th season. Thank you, Miles, and thank you, Ben.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Lyle.
because you guys weren't on last week's show and you didn't listen to last week's show, I will tell you quickly that I talked about a Objective-C bug with Brian quite a bit. And this was a problem with a sound, a callback, which is a bit of code that runs. Well, if you listen to the post, we're just going to get geeky. A callback not firing after a sound file was played. And while I was in Vegas, we were at a qual. Actually, the next day after we recorded the show, we were at a qualitative analysis watching kids interact with our show. And we record that because we actually see how they do things and we ask them questions and it's all, you know, we talk about it. And that bug emerged on video, which was nice for me because I knew exactly the flow that happened. The audio file never played and the audio file also never completed its block, which led me to a little closer to what might be the problem. Then on Thursday evening, I got home. I was home and I was showing my wife a different thing I'd changed and fixed, and the bug emerged again. But luckily, I was tethered to my Mac, and so I had my debug console open for Xcode. I was actually able to live inspect it.
Good.
And totally found out.
And your wife is like, wait, were you going to show me something or what? And you're like, no.
I was like, oh my God, I
got to do it. You don't understand. I have to do this.
And so what the problem actually was I was not using AV Player correctly. You have to check its status and actually listen for the observable of the status completing for it to work. So it's very exciting to have that finished and fixed, and it will be in the new app next week.
Congratulations.
So I was very excited to
Don't
fix
you
that
feel
problem.
Like a detective some
Absolutely.
Of the time?
Absolutely.
Like most of the time as a software engineer?
Yeah, confused detective.
Yeah.
No, I mean, sometimes I'm feeling like I'm like a construction person, like I'm really, you know, creating and creating, creating. And then every once in a while you run into those bugs that are like, what is happening? Why
so
is
like,
this?
If you ran into that as a construction worker, like you're putting 2x4s up, constructing the frame of this house, and then all of a sudden this 2x4 won't go up. Like, I don't know why. Like, I can't get it to stay up. Like, that wouldn't make any sense because the laws of the universe don't really change, and you can usually see what's going on. It's relatively simple, although it's a lot of work. But
that's why I think of software as like a very different thing than most engineering is different, because you're in software engineering, you kind of almost have to, you're almost always bounding yourself by the ability of your mind. Like that's where your bounds are. Like we do all these patterns to make software engineering simpler and easier so we can comprehend more.
So the boundaries of your mind and also the boundaries of your own inputs. So yes. Like if you're not getting the information you need to figure out why the bug is happening, your mind can be super crazy, but you're not going to be able to figure it out. Right?
Debugging tools are definitely
the only limit is yourself at ZumbleCon.
Yeah, it's tricky.
What? You know ZomboCon,
right?
I know
this is the post show. I can do that.
Chandler, do you know ZomboCon? Oh, thank God.
This is ZomboCon. I was gonna say something, but I don't remember what it is. Oh yeah. When people are learning to program and they run into problems like this,
it's just
like they forget a parenthesis or something, right? Which is a mistake that you stop making once you get better at this. Hold on. I'm being interrupted by ZomboCon.
Go on. We can hear you much better than that.
I can't think. You're sandblasting my brain.
Stop it, dude.
Yeah, jerk.
Right in front. You just stole that stuff.
Point taken.
Anyway, all I was trying to say, is if you're learning programming and you run into those bugs, you're not alone. Like that, it happens. That's part of it. You know? And actually, I feel like the best engineers that I know are not the ones who don't run into those bugs. They're the ones who can persist in dealing with them and not get crazy frustrated.
Yeah, interesting.
Like I can.
Do you get crazy frustrated?
Yeah, sometimes. Like the other day, I was just writing some JSON. It's just JSON. Like, what can go wrong with JSON? And I had
surprisingly
this,
a lot.
I had this issue, and for some reason, the changes I was making weren't. Whatever, it was really frustrating, and I think I spent probably 20 minutes on it, and then I realized that as part of my test plan for the stuff that I was working on, it was copying a JSON file from somewhere else and overwriding the file I was trying to edit.
So you were editing something that you weren't really using.
Simultaneously,
so frustrating.
Simultaneously, my editor didn't detect this, and so my editor was like, "Oh yeah, you've already edited this file. Like this is what the file looks like." And my only hint was that the file kept looking like it wasn't saved.
Miles, there's a lot of stories we didn't get to.
That's fine.
Yeah, you should cover stories if you want to. But
no, I don't want to.
I think we're good.
Okay. Hey, I'm going to run.
Thank you guys so much. That was fun.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Have a good night.
Good night.
All right, take care.